Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 99.
The eight Vajras, these powerful guardians, are escorting Tang Monk and his disciples Sun Wukong, Zubaji, Shaowujing back home.
Yeah. Mission accomplished, you'd think. They've got the scriptures.
They've done it. And all the other deities who are protecting them in secret.
Right. The five revealers, the four duty deities, Six Ding and Six Jia, Guardian Garba. Quite the crew.
They all go to Guanyin Bodhisattva, basically saying, okay, job done. Can we clock off now?
Pretty much. They report the holy monk's journey is complete. They're asking for permission to wrap up their assignment. And Guanyin's pleased. She grants it.
But she asks something first, doesn't she?
She does. A key question. She asks about their heart and conduct throughout the whole ordeal. You know, how do they really hold up?
And the deities confirm?
They confirm. They say Tang Monk and the others were sincere and pious, despite, well, everything they went through, the immense suffering.
Okay, and this is where it takes a turn, right? The celestial admin kicks in.
Ah, you could say that. The deities hand over this book of difficulties. The source calls it a disaster ledger.
Essentially, yeah. It's not just a quick list. It's a detailed record of every single trial Tang Monk faced. Every single one. Wow. And Guanyin actually reads through the whole thing.
She does. Start to finish. You can imagine her just tallying up all those miles, all those dangers.
It must have been quite a list. What kind of things are on it? Is it just fighting monsters?
Oh, it's way more varied than that. Some are really surprising, like the very first one listed, Golden Cicada Banished.
Golden Cicada.
That refers to Tang Monk's previous life. So his trials started, in a way, before he was even Tang Monk. It implies this whole thing was fated, karmic.
Whoa. Okay, what else?
Well, then you have stuff from when he was a baby. Yeah, nearly killed at birth, thrown into the river at full moon. Terrible hardships right from the start.
It's not just adult trials.
Not at all. Then, yeah, you get the more famous ones like Yellow Wind Monster Blocked or Road Blocked by Flame Mountain. 47th difficulty, that one.
I remember the Flame Mountain. Big challenge.
Huge. But then there are others you might not expect, like number 78, Marrying in India.
Marrying? How is that a difficulty?
It was a test of his vows, his resolve against worldly temptation, presented as a potential marriage alliance. So it shows the trials weren't just physical danger.
Right, it's hitting different aspects, tests of spirit, character.
Exactly, resolve,
yeah.
Purity. It wasn't just about surviving monsters, it was about really refining his entire being, pushing him to the absolute limit in every way possible.
Okay, so Guanyin goes through this whole extensive list, 80 entries in total.
80 entries meticulously recorded.
And what does she find? Or rather, what does she not find?
This is the bombshell. After reviewing all 80, she announces, essentially, hold on, for nine returns to truth, the holy monk has endured 80 difficulties.
80.
But it's still a short one. He cannot complete this number.
Short one. After all that, 108,000 miles, 80 near-death experiences, temptations, monsters. And it's not enough because the count is off by one.
Seems that way. It sounds almost like, yeah, like you said, a celestial audit. The quality of his spirit was confirmed, but the quantity wasn't right.
But why? Why 81? Why is that number so critical? It feels a bit arbitrary.
It's not arbitrary in this context. It ties into this really important concept. Nine returns to truth, or
nine times nine.
Exactly. 81. In both Buddhist and Taoist thinking, that number represents ultimate completion, perfection,
yeah.
A full cycle.
Ah, okay. So it's symbolic.
Deeply symbolic. It's not just a random target. Reaching 81 signifies achieving this state of ultimate transformation and enlightenment. It's like the universe's way of saying, okay, now you're truly complete. The number itself holds power.
So it's a cosmic requirement, not just a matter of having suffered enough.
Precisely. The spiritual journey had to align with this specific numerical pattern for true completion.
Okay, my mind's a little blown here. So Guanyin realizes they're one short. What does she do? Tell him to go find another monster.
Huh. Not quite. Her response is even more direct and maybe more surprising. She immediately orders one of the deities, the revealer, catch up with the Vajras and create one more difficulty.
Create one. She orders another trial.
Yes. It's a direct command. Not let them face one more, but actively make one happen. Divine intervention to, well, fulfill the quota.
Wow. Okay. So does the revealer do it?
Instantly. He flies off eastward. Catches up to the eight Vajras, who are still escorting the pilgrims within a day and a night.
That's fast.
Very. And he whispers Guanyin's order to them.
And the Vajras just go along with it.
Without hesitation, they immediately stop the magical wind that's carrying the pilgrims and the scriptures through the air.
Oh no, what happens?
Well, the wind stops and boom. Tang Monk, Sun Wukong, Zhu Baji, Shao Wu Jing, the White Horse, and all those precious scriptures. They just fall out of the sky and hit the ground.
Seriously, that's the final trial, falling.
That's it. That sudden, unexpected, deliberately caused fall is the 81st difficulty. Engineered. Manufactured on the spot to make the number right.
That is wild. So perfection, true enlightenment in this story, it isn't just about enduring what comes your way naturally.
It seems not entirely. It also involves meeting these very specific, almost ritualistic requirements. Even if it means a little nudge from the heavens to make the math work out.
A celestial nudge. I like that. It changes how you think about completion.
It really does. And the text itself kind of reflects on this. There's a poem near the end.
Oh, yeah. What does it say? It
talks about the whole journey, saying something like, 99 returns to truth, the path is hard. Perseverance and firm resolve establish the profound pass. It emphasizes the difficulty, the need for determination.
Okay, standard stuff.
But then it adds, must practice diligently, expel all demons, must cultivate to restore the true Dharma. It reinforces that this rigorous, almost prescribed path, hitting all the marks, is essential.
And the 8 Vajras, they just drop them off on the west bank of the Tongchian River.
A place they've definitely been before.
Hmm.
Years earlier.
So what's going on? Why the detour right at the finish line?
Well, initially you get this great mix of relief, but also confusion from the disciples.
Right.
Pigsy, you know, always ready with a joke, laughs and says something like, this is getting fast and getting slow.
Huh. Classic Pigsy.
And Sam Monk just figures, oh, maybe it's a quick break.
Okay. But Monkey King.
Monkey King is silent.
Right.
He gets it. He understands there's something deeper happening here.
Ah, so his silence is the clue. It's not just about getting there.
Exactly. It's about hitting a specific number of trials.
Uh-huh.
A cosmic tally.
And Tang San Zhang hasn't quite finished the full 81 tribulations needed for his enlightenment. Is that it?
That's precisely it. The 99, or 9 times 9. 81. It's like cosmic accounting. Every single trial has to be ticked off.
So the Vajras dropping them there wasn't a mistake?
Not at all. It was deliberate. Divinely orchestrated, you could say. A necessary pause.
Because if they'd gone straight back,
that final 81st tribulation would have been missed. The count wouldn't be complete.
Wow. And Monkey knows this.
His quiet understanding shows how far he's come spiritually. He knows they can't just fly across. This last step is mandatory. It tells you something about how meticulous spiritual progress is seen in this story.
Okay, so they're stuck on the riverbank again, wondering how to get across.
And then, suddenly, this familiar face emerges from the water.
It's the Great White Turtle, the old turtle who helped them cross this exact river years ago.
Yeah, and it calls out to Tang Sun Zhang, saying it's been waiting for them to return for these few years.
That's incredible patience, just waiting there.
It really is. It speaks to how interconnected everything is on this journey. And the turtle offers to carry them across again.
Okay, how did they all fit?
Well, the source gives this great specific description. The white horse goes on its back first.
Right.
Pigsy gets behind the horse's tail. Tang San Zhang is on the horse's left, Sha Sang on the right.
And Monkey, where's Monkey?
Monkey King, ever the agile one, steps onto the turtle's neck and head.
Oh, of course he does.
And the turtle just glides across the river as if on flat ground. Seems like smooth sailing, right? The final leg.
You'd think so, but this is where it gets, well, really interesting and kind of awkward.
Mm-hmm. As they're getting close to the east bank, the old turtle asks Tang San Zhang that crucial question.
Teachers, when you were in the West, I asked you to inquire with the Buddha about my lifespan, my final destiny. Did you ask?
And here it is, the heart of the 81st tribulation, Tang San Zhang.
He forgot.
He completely forgot. The source says he was so wrapped up in getting the scriptures, the rituals, meeting the Buddha, shedding his mortal body.
All the big stuff.
All the big stuff, yeah. Other matters he did not care for in the least. He's just silent. Can't lie about it.
Oh, wow. That's such a human moment, isn't it? You get so focused on the ultimate goal
that you forget the smaller personal promises made along the way.
Mm.
The kindnesses shown to you.
Yeah. This isn't a demon attack. It's the direct result of a forgotten favor.
And it has immediate consequences, dramatic ones.
What does the turtle do?
Recognizing his request was ignored, the old turtle just sways its body and splashes into the water.
No.
Yep. Dumps the entire group horse, scriptures, luggage, everything straight into the Tongtian River.
And that is the final 81st tribulation.
That's it, stemming directly from that lax, that forgotten promise. It's a powerful lesson right at the end. Accountability.
So they're all in the water, but they don't drown, thankfully. Why not?
Right, the source explains that. Tang Sanzang had already shed his mortal coil back to Lingyan Crossing.
He'd achieved that level of enlightenment. He wasn't just a regular mortal anymore.
Exactly. The white horse, well, it's actually a dragon, so water is no problem.
Yeah.
And Pigsy and Sam Monk, they can both swim.
And Monkey.
Monkey uses his great divine power, swoops in, and helps Tang Sanzang out of the water immediately.
So they survive, but there's a cost.
Oh, yeah. A very tangible cost.
Yeah.
The scriptures, their clothes, the horse's saddle, everything is completely soaked.
Not ideal for sacred texts.
Definitely not. So they scramble onto the east bank, start trying to sort out this soggy mess.
And then more trouble.
Immediately. Just as they start laying things out, this furious storm kicks up out of nowhere.
What kind of storm?
A whirlwind, thunder, lightning, dense fog. It's sudden and violent.
Just bad luck. Or something else.
Monkey King figures it out fast. He says, this isn't natural. It's the work of yin demons.
Yin demons, dark energy forces.
Exactly. Negative spiritual forces trying to snatch the scriptures away.
Yeah.
A direct assault on the knowledge itself.
Why? Why are the scriptures such a target?
Monkey explains this too, and it's fascinating. He says the scriptures themselves are just incredibly powerful.
Wow, powerful.
Like snatching the essence of heaven and earth, powerful. Capable of granting immortality, eternal spring.
Wow.
This power makes them, get this, intolerable to heaven and earth, and feared by ghosts and gods.
So acquiring that kind of profound knowledge actually stirs things up, creates cosmic jealousy or resistance.
That's exactly the implication. It suggests that true, potent wisdom isn't passively received. Its very presence can disrupt the existing order, drawing opposition.
So how do they fight off these yin demons with wet scriptures?
Well, the source gives a few reasons for their success. First, surprisingly, the wetness actually helped.
How?
Made the scriptures heavier, harder for the demons to just whisk away. Almost like being grounded in the physical world protected them.
Okay, interesting. What else?
Tang Sanzang himself, with his newly achieved pure Dharma body, physically pressed down on the scriptures. His enlightened presence was like a shield.
Grounding them.
Yeah. And finally, Monkey King, with his pure yang nature, uses his iron rod, pure spiritual energy fighting off the dark.
Yang versus yin.
Exactly. And as dawn approaches, the yang energy becomes strong and the yin demons are repelled. Light overcomes darkness.
A symbolic victory after the literal soaking.
Absolutely. Which leads them to the very last act.
Drying the scriptures.
Right. With the storm gone, they move the soggy bundles to a high cliff to dry them in the sun.
And there's that intriguing detail in the text.
Yeah. It mentions that the sun-drying scripture stone, the actual rock they used, still exists there to this day. A physical reminder.
A connection across centuries. Amazing.
This whole final sequence, the demon assault, the successful drying it, signifies the complete triumph of that pure yang over the yin demons. Yeah, it's this moment, isn't it? You can feel the exhaustion, but also they're so close to being home.
And this happens.
And it's just, it feels almost cruel, right? After all the demons, all the trials, the very symbol of their success, the scriptures, are damaged by, well, just water.
So mundane, yeah.
It really makes you wonder, is there ever really a final challenge? Or does life just keep, you know, throwing things at you?
That's a really powerful thought. It's not just being tired. It's the mental hit of this last-minute problem. And while they're dealing with this this initial shock, some familiar faces show up. Fishermen.
Ah, yes, the fishermen. And these aren't just random people.
No.
They actually recognize the pilgrims. They remember them from 2 years before when they first passed through heading west.
Incredible, right? It really shows the impression they made back then.
Definitely. They weren't just forgotten travelers.
Absolutely. And Pigsy, well, you know Pigsy, always practical. He immediately asks about Chen family village, Chen Jiazhuang.
Right. Got to find the village.
The fishermen say it's about 20 lines south, maybe 7 miles or so. And Pigsy suggests, hey, let's take these wet scriptures there, dry them out, get some clean clothes, find some food.
Can't blame him. Yeah. After all that time, basic comforts must have sounded amazing.
Totally. But Tang Monk, his first reaction, he just wants to dry them right there on the spot and head straight back. No delays.
Push, push, push. Finish the mission.
Yeah, no time for, you know, being comfortable.
It really highlights their different personalities even now, doesn't it? Pigsy's focused on immediate very human needs.
Yeah.
Comfort, normalcy almost.
Well, Tang Monk is just laser focused on concluding the mission. That's it.
But you could argue Pixie's practicality, even if it's about comfort, is also kind of a necessary balance, right? Maybe stops Tang Monk from just blindly rushing ahead.
That's a good point. Yeah. So speaking of familiar faces, these fishermen then run into Chen Cheng.
Ah, yes. He hosted them before.
Right. And they helped him out with a problem involving a sacrifice for his son back then.
So there's history there. Gratitude.
To definitely. Chen Cheng is thrilled, just overjoyed to hear they're back. He rushes out, actually kneels down in respect, and insists they come to his village. He's like, why are you guys messing around? That's the phrase used. Panong with the scriptures out here when you've finished the quest.
It shows how much their journey meant, even to the ordinary people they encountered. Their return is a big deal.
Monkey King, well, he kind of cuts to the chase, tells Chen Cheng, yeah, we'll come, but only after these scriptures are dry.
Priorities.
And that's when Chen Cheng asks the obvious question, why are the scriptures in your clothes all wet? Tang Monk tells him the truth. The white turtle Bai Yuan, the same one that carried them across the river heading west years ago. It carried them back east this time, bringing them home. But just as they got near the shore, the turtle asked him something specific.
The question.
Had Tang Monk remembered to ask the Buddha about the turtle's lifespan, a promise made years ago?
Oh, boy. And this is such a critical point, isn't it? What happens when even the most devoted person on the most important mission, well, slips up on a promise, even one that seems small in the grand scheme?
And Tang Monk, you can just feel the regret. He admits he hadn't asked. He forgot.
Wow, just forgot.
Yeah. And the consequence. Instant. The turtle, furious, just plunged them into the water, soaking everything. Tang Monk tells Chen Cheng the whole story.
And those have real consequences.
It doesn't matter how big your goal is, those smaller commitments, they can still circle back.
Absolutely. You can't just ignore the small stuff on the way to the big prize.
So they start gathering up the scriptures to take them to Chen family village to dry properly. But as they're doing this, another problem, a big one.
Oh no, what now?
Several volumes, specifically of the Fo Ben Xing Jing, the Buddha's original practice sutra, they'd stuck to the stone they were drying them on.
Stuck fast?
Yes, stuck hard. And when they pulled them free, the ends of the scrolls just tore off, ripped.
So the actual scriptures are damaged.
Damaged, incomplete. The text even says the characters, the Ziji, were left imprinted on the stone, like a scar.
Wow.
And Tang Monk is just devastated, filled with regret, blaming himself, saying, it was our carelessness. We didn't look after them properly.
I can feel his despair. I mean, after everything, the goal itself, the sacred truth is physically marred right at the very end. It must have felt like total failure.
Completely. It seems like the ultimate disaster.
Mm.
But then comes the twist, the real aha moment.
From Monkey King, right?
From Monkey King. He just bursts out laughing, says, it's not about that. It's not about that. Buzaichi. Buzaichi.
Which must have sounded crazy at that moment. Laughing. Now.
Exactly. But this is where the story gives us something really profound. Monkey King isn't just brushing off their mistake. He's looking deeper.
He says, heaven and earth are not complete. Gai Tian Di Bukuan. That line is incredible.
So powerful. What does that even mean in this context?
Well, he's saying that imperfection, incompleteness, it's fundamental. It's part of the natural order of the universe. Heaven and earth themselves aren't perfect, so why should they expect this scripture, this human endeavor to be?
So the tearing, it wasn't just a mistake. It was almost meant to be, part of a bigger picture.
Kind of, yeah. He calls it the mystery of incompleteness, Bukuan Ziao Miao. He argues it's something beyond human control, Kiren Li Suo Ning Yu Ye. It's suggesting that maybe true completion, true wholeness, has to include these imperfections.
Wow. That completely reframes it. It's not failure. It's a lesson about reality.
Exactly. It shifts it from a moment of carelessness to this profound philosophical insight. It's almost like the universe itself is teaching them through this accident that perfection, as we imagine it, flawless, complete, might be impossible. Or maybe even undesirable.
Incompleteness is woven into everything.
It seems to be the message, yes. It really challenges our whole idea of what finished or perfect means, doesn't it? Maybe accomplishment isn't about achieving flawlessness.
Maybe it's about embracing the journey, tears and all.
Precisely. It's a powerful antidote, maybe, to our modern obsession with getting everything exactly right, with perfect outcomes. Maybe the real value, the deepest truths, come from those very imperfections.
That torn page isn't just damage. It's a symbol of something much bigger.
A testament to a cosmic principle, you could say.
So after this incredible insight from Monkey, the pilgrims finally gather up their scriptures, torn ends and all, and head to Chen Family Village.
And the welcome mat is out.
Oh, yeah. The news has spread. Everyone, young and old, comes out eager to greet them, celebrate their return. The village where they had that big adventure saving the kids, Chen Guanbao and Yi Chengjin, from being sacrificed years ago.
Right. So the villagers must be thrilled to see them.
Oh, absolutely. Overwhelming reception. Huge gratitude. A proper hero's welcome.
You'd think after, what, 14 years and all that trauma, they'd be starving. Ready for a massive feast.
That's what you'd expect.
Right.
But the story makes a point about how they've changed, especially their appetites.
How so?
Well, Tang San Zhang, he's tasted, like, immortal food from the Buddha himself. He shed his mortal body back at Lingdian Crossing to become a Buddha to be.
Right, that symbolic crossing.
So he just doesn't really crave earthly food anymore. The text says he only slightly shows intention to eat, basically just to be polite when they really push him.
Okay, that makes sense for him.
Yeah.
What about the others? Wukong.
Wukong, well, he's never really been into human food anyway. And Sha Wujing, Sandy, he eats very little now too.
But the big question, Zhu Baji. Mister, I could eat a mountain.
Huh? Yes, Baji. This is the best part. He actually puts his bowl down.
No, Baji.
Claims his spleen and stomach suddenly weakened. Can you believe it?
That is a massive change for him. The ultimate foodie turning down food.
It is. But, and this is very Baji.
There's always a but with Baji.
The villagers keep inviting them to feast after feast, house after house. And despite his weakened stomach, he still somehow manages to put away, and the text specifies this, 8 or 9 vegetarian dishes and 20 to 30 steamed buns.
Oh, Baji. So he's changed, but maybe not completely changed.
Exactly. It's fascinating, isn't it? Even the most, let's say, earthly one of the groups shows a real shift. But those old habits, they still have a little pull. It suggests transformation isn't always like a total wipe. It's a process.
That really makes you think about our own big life changes or achievements. Do those old desires just vanish? Or do they just loosen their grip a bit? Still there, but manageable.
Yeah, maybe the echoes remain, almost like a reminder of the journey you took. A sometimes funny reminder, in Baji's case.
So, while they're getting all this praise in the village, Tang San Zhang tells them the whole story, right? The entire journey.
He does. He recounts the big moments, bathing at Yu Zhen Temple for purification, shedding his mortal body at Lingyan Crossing, that symbolic death and rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, meeting the Tathagata, the Buddha, at the heart of it all.
And this is where that really strange detail about actually getting the scriptures comes up, isn't it? It wasn't just handed over.
No, not at all straightforward. Tang San Zhang tells the villagers that back at the monastery, two of the Buddha's own attendants, these venerables named Ananda and Kasyapa, they actually asked for personal gifts.
A bribe? At the Buddha's
place?
Essentially,
yeah. A bribe, an offering, a little something extra. And because the pilgrims had nothing left to give, the venerables initially handed them scrolls that were completely blank. Wordless scriptures.
Wordless. What's the point of that?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? They had to go back, complain to the Buddha himself, who basically said, yeah, my scripture shouldn't be obtained too cheaply, but agrees they shouldn't have given blank ones. Only then, after this second appeal, did they get the proper readable scriptures, the full Tripitaka, the 3 baskets of Buddhist teachings. It raises exactly those questions. Is true understanding something that just gets handed to you? Or does it require effort, maybe even a kind of payment, whether material or spiritual? Or maybe those wordless scriptures represented a deeper truth that couldn't be captured in words until they'd, you know, gone through the whole process?
It's a really complex idea. That maybe the form knowledge takes initially isn't its final form until you've earned it somehow.
Precisely. And it also hints that even in, like, the most sacred places, human-like flaws or conditions can creep in. It's not sanitized.
Okay, so after the storytelling and the modest eating.
Hey, relatively modest for some.
The Chen family shows them something amazing they've built, right?
Yes. They revealed this magnificent temple of saving lives, built entirely in the pilgrims' honor for rescuing the children all those years ago.
Wow.
And it's described as really grand red gates adorned with treasures and inside statues of the 4 pilgrims themselves.
Statues of them? What did they think of that?
Oh, they had some funny comments. Baji apparently said Wukong's statue looked just like him, a skinny monkey. Xiaowu Jing agreed Baji's looked like him, but then joked that the master statue was maybe too handsome.
Huh. That's classic. So the village really revered them.
Absolutely. The villagers tell them they tore down their old temple and built this new one, and ever since, they've had good harvest, prosperity, everything's been great. They credit it all to the pilgrims' blessings.
How do they react to that?
Sun Wukong, actually quite humbly, says it's really heaven's gift, not their doing, but he blesses them anyway for future prosperity.
Nice, but even with all this adoration, Tang Sanzang decides it's time to go.
Yeah, despite the feast and the gratitude, he senses they're now truly accomplished. Their task is done. And he says something really profound. True masters do not reveal their true form. Those who reveal their form are not true masters.
That's powerful. Almost a paradox.
It is. He worries they'll get held up by endless celebrations by being treated like celebrities, essentially. So he decides they need to leave quietly.
Just sneak out.
In the dead of night. All four of them, and the white horse too, who's also achieved enlightenment by now, they all understand. No fanfare, just a silent departure.
That raises a big question for us, doesn't it? How do you handle that kind of massive success, that public worship? What does it mean to be a true master if the world today demands constant visibility?
It's a huge contrast to modern culture, for sure. Their quiet exit speaks volumes about humility, about detachment from that kind of earthly praise. Their work was done. The recognition wasn't the point.
And as they leave the village, what happened?
As they're departing silently, suddenly, the eight great Vajras, these are powerful celestial guardian figures in Buddhism, call out to them from the sky.
Whoa.
And Tang Sanzang just ascends, rises up into the air, heading back towards the heavens, signaling their final true return.
A pretty dramatic exit after the quiet sneak away.
A very symbolic one, showing they've transcended the earthly realm entirely.
Thank you.